is Upfront on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Ghana's first president, Kwame Nkrumah, was one of the leading advocates behind the idea of Pan-Africanism. He was also a well-known soccer fan who believed that the sport had the potential to be a unifying vehicle for many post-independence African countries. Now, two young Ghanaian filmmakers are hoping to shine a spotlight on some of Nkrumah's efforts through a documentary film currently in production.
Thank you guys for joining me today. Talk about this project that you're working on. How did Kwame Nkrumah envision using football as a tool for Pan-African unity?
There's different aspects to this, right? So there is the idea of coming forth and letting FIFA, the larger body of organization, knowing that we as Africans have the ability to govern ourselves and we as Africans have the ability to compete on a larger scale than we're being given credit for. So by showing the skill and the ability of the African, in this instance, the African man playing sports, Nkrumah was letting the world understand that we will not be pushed around to some degree. We are who we say we're going to be, and we're going to stand by our rules and moral. And whenever we come to the table, you have to respect the African for what we have to offer. So yeah.
Quite cool.
Yeah, and maybe just to add on to that, you know, football has always been a catalyst on the continent to push for decolonization. You can go back as early as 1924 in Egypt, the club Al Ahly in Egypt, sort of using the platform that they had as a club to kind of push for decolonization and push their voice against, you know, any sort of discrimination against their people. So when Nkrumah comes in power in 1957, he's sort of aware of the unifying power of football. He understands what football has been able to do for certain countries on the continent when it comes to, you know, the idea of self-governance, the idea of rejection of colonialism. And so that's really where the interest sparks. But also Nkrumah played football in high school. Most people don't know that. He was really into a lot of sports in high school. If you go back to some of his early beginnings with some of the voices in the documentary who are very well versatile in telling Nkrumah's story from his birth all the way to his death, you know, Nkrumah was really engaged in sports. So he's already in the know of what sports could do in terms of bringing people together. That's really where some of the energy came from. And then, you know, when you add all the things that were happening on the continent at that time with regards to sports, he saw the larger vision more than anyone else.
Right. And what were some of the, I guess, key moments or events where Nkrumah's vision through football was the most evident? And how did this strategy impact the political and social landscape of Africa at the time? Many of the countries were still under colonialism. They were fighting for independence.
So I think, you know, it's a very interesting question, a very brilliant one too as well, because all of these things are happening at the same time. And I think that's really where a lot of his efforts through football is overlooked, because a lot of the political things are happening within the same timeline, right? So when Nkrumah gets in power in 1957, he makes this bold claim that Ghana's independence is meaningless unless it's tied or linked with the total liberation of the African continent. So right there and there, Nkrumah is sacrificing Ghana as a base for all liberation movements, right? So so then, you know, obviously CAF, you know, Confederation of African Football, is forming around that same time. You know, by then Ghana gets involved heavily in 1957. Nkrumah, once again, like I said, he knows the power of football, so he gets Ghana right into FIFA. He makes donations, to CAF, he gets Ghana right into CAF and makes donations towards the foundation of the Confederation of African Football. One, to gain a larger voice, because he sees the potential of what football could do in terms of unity. He's already aware of that. And so in 1958, Nkrumah also, Ghana becomes part of FIFA, right? And so once again, when Ghana's independence is in play, football becomes the nation's sport. I mean, Stanley Matthews, who is the leading scorer and the European, you know, player of the year in England, is invited to Ghana to play a lot of exhibition games. right then and there, Nkrumah is setting the stage of what football could be for Ghana and for the continent. Between 1958 and 1962, there's a lot of exhibition games that are being played in Ghana and abroad, right? This is Nkrumah's way of letting the world know that we can compete on the world stage. But at the same time, he's using the platform to voice his ideals of a United States of Africa, right? Because he makes that bold claim in 1958 at the All African People's Conference in Accra, where he says, you know, forward then, you know, the United States of Africa, he makes that bold claim. But football is happening around the same time. So in 1962, Real Madrid, which is, you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world, you know, just won their championship, and then they Nkrumah invites them to play the Ghanaian Black Stars in Accra in 1962. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, Ghana was in the lead until the latter minutes of the game when, you know, Real Madrid equalizes and now it's 3-3. But this is Nkrumah's way of showing the world that when the black man is given a chance, he can achieve anything, you know. So this is how Nkrumah was kind of using football as a tool to kind of push this idea of, you know, the black man is capable of managing his own affairs. Because if you look at the landscape, Ghana, throughout all these successes under Nkrumah's regime in football, was the only country on the continent that had an African coach. This is very important because all of the countries were being colonized in a certain way that, you know, even our football, we didn't have black coaches. But Nkrumah made sure that we had a black coach, Ghana had an African coach, and all of these things are happening. And it's clear evidence of what Nkrumah is trying to achieve through football in saying, hey, you know, through Ghana, Africa could find itself. Through Ghana, Africa could see itself. So when neighboring countries are you know, gain their independence, the Ghanaian team is invited to play what we call a friendly match or a friendly game. This is all part of the process of, you know, showing that we are brothers and sisters, that we belong together, that, you know, football can unite us. But these are all these the ways that Nkrumah was trying to really galvanize this idea of a United States of Africa through sports.
How do you think Nkrumah's vision from way back almost over 6 years ago resonates with today's African unity ideal movement?
We know what Nkrumah represented, you know, and we know that what we have now as an African Union is not what Nkrumah was looking for. I mean, you know, this idea of a United States of Africa or an African unity sparked these ideological blocks on the continent. So, you know, we're looking at the Monrovia group, the Casablanca group. So the Casablanca group is Nkrumah's group, for example, which included a lot of the Northern African countries. You know, when people start saying, when people say to me, you know, North Africans don't see themselves as Africans, I laugh at it because when it came down to independence now, liberation now, detached from colonialism now, all of our North African brothers and sisters were in the fight with us. They were part of the Casablanca group. So on one end, you have Nkrumah's group, which is the Casablanca group, saying, hey, if we take our foot off the momentum, what is about to come is going to be worse than where we're going now. So let's try to get together now because this is the time. We have the momentum. Then you have the Monrovia group, which is like, no, let's take time. You know, let's have others, you know, other countries just gained their independence. You know, we don't want to rough feathers. And so when 1963, when the OAU is formed, it's pretty much Nkrumah just compromising because it's either like 100% of nothing or 10% of something, right? But that's not really the type of unity that he was looking for. And people that were backing him at that particular time, those were not the type of unity that we're looking for. So if you look at the landscape of what Nkrumah was pushing for and what we have now, you see that there's a lot of individuality amongst us as a continent, because even though we have these regional blocks, there's still that individual presence, which has caused us more harm than good, because it's very easy to kind of for colonialism to attack from an individual space versus a unity space. And I think that's really what Nkrumah was trying to preach when he talks about all of this in his last book, you know, Neocolonialism, the last phase of imperialism. He talks about all of these things happening if we don't take care of being united and being a united front in the early stages. These are some of the things that we're gonna encounter, and it's evident based on the landscape of things now on the continent.
Yeah. So, aside from, I guess, Pan-Africanism and those ideals of togetherness and unity, how do you think that his use of football has influenced the current state of football or soccer in Africa today?
So that will go back to 1966, right? So I mean, obviously, the World Cup is like the cream of the crop when it comes to football, right? So we have a lot of African countries that were heavily involved in FIFA. Ghana got involved in 1958. There are other countries that got involved either earlier than that or within, you know, sort of what we call our independence era, you know, the early 1960s. You know, a lot of countries got independent on the continent. They all joined FIFA because Ghana had pushed that agenda forward for most of the countries to see football as one of the ways to fight against, you know, decolonization. So in 1966, the World Cup is supposed to happen in England. It did happen in England, but there is a radical movement that is ignited by Nkrumah and his sports director at that time, Ohene John, and CAF, the Confederation of African Football. The reason why this is called the 1966 boycott, very, very important timeline in our history as a continent, because it's the first time that a continent actually boycotted the FIFA World Cup. So 1966, you know, none of the African countries played for the qualifying, you know, played in the qualifiers. One, because the hoops that were put in front of us made it very difficult for us to have our own slot. We had to play against a couple of continents, and then we had to play like an European team that qualified. It's just so much to get an African country to qualify for the World Cup. Nkrumah thought that was unfair, and rightfully so. It was unfair to Africans because Africans had been very pivotal in the shape of FIFA at that particular time. And Ghana was sacrificed because Ghana had just won the 1965 African Cup of Nations. So they were the country that was really in their prime to be able to potentially qualify. Mm-hmm. So Nkrumah led the boycott of the 1966 World Cup. And that shocked the waves. You know, FIFA was really shocked that Africa wasn't going to try to participate. And so in 1970, FIFA, you know, restructures and give Africa its own slot. I mean, it comes 4 years later. But this is sort of where Nkrumah was very effective as far as a leader and a voice for African independence. And so 1966, the boycott happens. In 1970, Africa gets its own slot. We're going into 2026. We're looking at potentially 9 African countries representing the continent at the World Cup. None of this is happening if Nkrumah doesn't step up in 1966. And so these history and... Yeah, exactly. So, you know, these history and these things need to be really be in the forefront, because Nkrumah's voice has been minimized so long, because to give credit to Nkrumah is to give credit to his ideologies, to give credit to his philosophies, which most people don't want, because, you know, the radicalism of Nkrumah can really spark a revolution on a continent. And most people don't want that. And so a lot of his achievements are minimized on purpose to kind of keep the silence per se. But yeah, I mean, 1966 was really huge, and this is where we are now. And I think credit has to be given to Nkrumah. We highlight all of this in the documentary, the full documentary that will come out eventually. Yeah.
And what impact do you hope that this documentary will have on its viewers, both in Africa and globally in the diaspora here? And most importantly, I guess, I wanted to ask you this, what lessons can contemporary African leaders and societies learn from Nkrumah's approach to unification through sports? I'm looking at, say, in Rwanda, that has embraced basketball, the Basketball Africa League taking place.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at the Gen Z protests in Kenya recently, and things of that nature, where you see this new generation are using sports as a vehicle in many ways to express themselves.
Yeah, I'll let Nana handle that.
So I think I know from our end is for the world to know and understand the importance of Nkrumah when it comes to football. As I said before, a lot of people always just look at him from a political standpoint. But his work that he's done goes to show the selflessness, right? That as an individual, as a people, as a country, as a continent, that we must first assume. You know, the fight is much long. The fight is much bigger than just Ghana per se. His sacrifice of Ghana, as Kwaku said, goes to show that the success of one country, right, doesn't necessarily mean the success of all countries within the diaspora, but the success of the diaspora could in turn mean the success of the countries within it. So that's one thing that we want to let this video, well, that's one thing I want to put forth within this video for people to understand the selflessness that we must all assume as we look to fight this fight that Nkrumah once started. Also, as you said, we're with Rwanda, and then whatever sports that we as a people decide to pick up, don't just pick up just to play, pick up to make your mark, right? Mm-hmm. Bring your demands, but then make an impact in the sport that you play. So when somebody comes up to you and says, X, Y, and Z, we will be honored for you to be, you know, part of our tournament. You can make your demands, make your demands and state your claims, and know that yes, you too are fighting the fight, whether it may be through sports or whether, you know, the tool or the vehicle may be. It doesn't necessarily have to be you being there as a politician in front of a podium. Just play one game at a time from whistle to whistle.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. We are chatting with filmmakers Nana Poku and Kwaku Awuah about their upcoming documentary film titled More Than a Goal that shines a spotlight on Kwame Nkrumah's use of soccer to unite Africa.
And the documentary is titled More Than a Goal, is that correct?
Yeah, it is.
How do you think, I don't know what kind of themes are you covering aside from Nkrumah and sports, but how do you think the themes that you've explored kind of align with the current cultural and social dynamics on the continent? I guess to go back a little bit to the previous question.
Yeah, so I mean, I think one of the things, many things that we're looking at, but, you know, the most important thing is, you know, the quest for African unity, right? This idea of a United States of Africa has been talked about for years, right? And in a way, we see glimpses sometimes here and there, right? But really, I think Africa has to ask itself a question as to whether unity is indeed in our best interest, right? And I think there's a lot that Nkrumah brings to the table when you look at his blueprint and the things that he wanted to achieve through unity as for us as a continent. So I think one is to raise that conversation. We need to have an honest conversation about the current state of the continent and where we lie in terms of if unity is really a response that could really change our destiny as a continent. And so that's really one of the themes that the documentary will aim to explore. You know, the secondary theme obviously is football, because Nkrumah used many avenues, right, to kind of push this agenda forward. I think one of the tools that or the avenues that's not heavily explored is his use of football. And that's where we come in, is to kind of shed light on that, because we understand the importance of the sport. We know that that's the most popular sport on the continent. But at one time, we had a leader that kind of really believed in this sport as the sport that could really bring some sort of unity amongst us. And so on the secondary note, we look into that. But I think the primary thing that we really want to explore and kind of start having these healthy conversations, whether we agree or disagree, but those conversations are necessary to really look at the future of the continent, where we are now and where we ought to be. And we have to really look in the mirror and ask, you know, is a united Africa the best way forward for us to kind of have a future of the continent that we all will want to see coming up in the next couple of years or 100 years or whatever? Yeah.
Africa, and then to
the.
Okay, so
go ahead, sir. Go
if
ahead.
I can just add on to that, one of the underlying parents to add to what Kwaku has made mention is the importance of knowing how much politics touches on the average day person. Whether you're a musician, whether you're a historian, whether you're a teacher, whether you get involved in politics or not, whether you choose to or not, politics will affect you. So the voices that you will see or that you've seen inside the documentary and the sizzle so far, these are people from different walks of life, you know. And then it goes to show the impact that Nkrumah had, that the continent has, that politics has on the average day person. So we just want to bring that to the forefront. And then to also highlight one more thing in terms of emotion. If you want to look at the 2010 World Cup or even the most recent World Cup, when Africa got to the
The
qualifying round,
semifinals.
you know, where at some point, and let's say 2010 specifically, right, where Asamoah Gyan had the penalty kick and then he was going for the kick and then he missed it.
That's
Anybody, any
true,
African, right, any African that
right?
was watching that at that point, right, knew that that was more than a goal that they were
Yeah, it
expecting,
was.
right? It
It
was
was.
like you felt it. You felt the emotion inside the air. So that just goes to show that it's, you know, it's not just a game. I mean, we're watching because it's a game, but there was a piece of you that you want to feel in there.
Absolutely. And I do remember in 2022, I was in Accra during the World Cup when Ghana was supposed to play that, you know, the rematch that had been awaited for.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Right. And also, so my other question was that, you know, again, continuing on the thread of the larger impact of sports on the continent, we know that Africa has a very youthful population, the youngest continent on average. What role do you think sports plays, of, you know, particularly football? Or what role can it play in addressing some of these contemporary issues like unemployment, like youth unemployment?
Well, I mean, I think sports, you know, any tool has a significant role to play on the continent, but sports in particular is because, you know, like you mentioned, we are a youthful continent, and a lot of our youth are heavily involved in sports because they love it, because, you know, they have the talent for it. But yes, I mean, I think sports should be utilized to a once again to a larger context than what it is now, because if you look at, you know, the civil war that happened in Ivory Coast, you know, it was football that actually ended that with, you know, with Drogba, you know, when he scored the goal, and, you know, there was a match that was played, and he just pleaded and pleaded. He said, you know, we got to stop the violence, we got to love each other, we got to do this. So sports has always had, because there's a lot of emotion tied to sports. And I think because of that, you know, it plays a significant role in our development, right? And so I think part of the larger picture is to kind of encourage our you know, our sportsmen and women to be really to really look at their talent as just not on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, because they do have a lot of influence. And I think Nkrumah did that by it helped us to show that. When he was in power, what football could do in terms of changing the narrative, right? So it was no more about, oh, those Africans who didn't have boots and were playing barefooted. You know, when we were playing Real Madrid and drawing 3-3, it was the respectable Black Stars. It was, oh, Africa is really good. We need to give Africa a look. And so I think, you know, just the mindset needs to change. You know, when you are in a sport uniform, you're not just on the pitch, but your actions can speak louder off the pitch as well. And I think we just want to use the platform that we have to encourage that. You know, when the documentary drops, people get to see why, you know, sportsmen and women should be heavily involved in politics as well, because it's really correlated.
Yeah. So to add to what Kwaku has said, you know, sports has always had a political side. For those that have the power, don't want to admit it. I mean, they know it, but I guess that they want to give the impression that sports should just be sports and let politics be politics.
Absolutely.
Whether it is Tommy Smith during the Olympics raising his fist, Colin Kaepernick during, well, with American football taking a knee, LeBron James even got to a point where they said, just shut up and dribble. You know what I mean? So it even them, if you want to look at those in quote unquote first world country per se, if they understand, if our brothers and sisters in these countries understand the power that sports has, we on the continent within the diaspora, we must assume that responsibility and must also assume that power and say, you know, we have a responsibility to put forth and our voices must be heard. And we do it through sports, so be it.
And what kind of research did you conduct? Can you share some of the interesting or surprising facts that you uncovered about Nkrumah's soccer or football initiatives at the time?
Research, huh? That's been like a decade long of research. I think, you know, most importantly for us is, you know, every World Cup collection that we've launched has told a piece of this story. So when Nana mentions the four unity phase blueprint that we put out, educate, unite, to build and progress, each stage or each collection has kind of talked about this story a little bit, right? And so now that we've kind of phased out, you know, this blueprint, is the time to kind of tell the entire story. But yeah, I mean, research has been, you know, a lot of great people that we respect who have great opinions, historians, you know, PLO Lumumba, you know, in Kenya, Anochi Frimpong in Ghana, you know, Peter Aleji in the US, who is also South African, has really written extensively about African football and decolonization. But some of the interesting facts, you know, you start picking up some of these interesting facts about Nkrumah when you start talking to people who have really studied Nkrumah, who have really lived during Nkrumah's era. You know, we have two voices in the trailer right now who actually played for the Black Stars of Ghana and also played in Nkrumah's club. It's called the Real Republicans. And when you're getting such information, firsthand information, who the man was, what he believed in, how he looked, how he felt, his aura, everything, it's just humbling. You know, I personally didn't know Nkrumah was even into sports. I just thought, you know, I didn't know he played sports until we started kind of exactly. Yeah. So yeah, you know, and there's this famous picture from James Banner, which with Nkrumah kicking a football, which is on social and online as well. But that whole connection was made when you look at that picture and then you're hearing stories from these legends and these historians talk about how Nkrumah was heavily involved in sports, why he chose football, because he felt he saw the unifying piece of football and all that good stuff. And so, yeah, for us, you know, it's been a decade of just being humble servants to the story that we want to tell. So it's a lot of digesting information, reading a lot of articles, a lot of books, Nkrumah's books. We even have them in PDFs.
So, do you have any footage from the archival material from the time?
Yeah, so I mean, a few of them you see in the trailer. Obviously, we're raising funds now to complete the entire documentary, and part of the use of those funds will go to purchase some of the archival footage. Obviously, you know, it's owned by a lot of the British, and so we have to purchase them, and they're not cheap. So, but you know, yes. So yeah, I mean, the whole idea is to connect the past to the present, right? And so finally, you need that.
You're in the process of fundraising.
Yes.
For the completion of the documentary. When do you hope to finish it and release it to the public?
Right now, we are looking at spring or fall of 2025 to launch the entire documentary. It will probably be a 90-minute documentary just based on conversations we've had with our production team. And so we are still in the process of interviewing a couple more voices we want to get. And so, you know, part of my trip to Ghana in next month is to kind of facilitate those conversations, meet with some of the voices that we've been communicating with to set up their interview times and dates and all of that. So yeah, I mean, it's a blessing. It's really humbling. And we are hoping that, you know, all the voices that have expressed interest in working with us will come on board, and we can tell a beautiful story that will inspire generations to come.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all of you for tuning in, whether you joined us via our FM stations or streamed the show online. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are at VOA Upfront. Check out our website at voaafrica.com/upfront. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Have a great week ahead, Africa.